Aloha, boys and girls. You are listening to Inside the Desert Oasis Room, episode number 32. This episode is sponsored by Tanduay Rum. Established in the Philippines in 1854, Tanduay is the world's largest rum producer and winner of over 170 international medals in the past four decades. As sponsor of the Inside the Desert Oasis Room podcast and the toast to Master Ninja Ray Buen at the legendary Tiki Tea in Los Angeles, California, Tanduay Rum is the perfect companion to celebrate all things tiki. For more information, check out their webpage at TanduayUS.com or follow them on Facebook or Instagram at TanduayUSA. This podcast is also sponsored in part by The Royal Hawaiian. Founded in Laguna Beach, California in 1947, The Royal Hawaiian is South Orange County's premier tropical drink and dining destination. Come try their signature cocktail, the Lapu Lapu, a delicious combination of tropical fruit juices with a generous float of dark spirits, or other island-inspired favorites like ahi tuna poke or the dynamite crab-crusted mahi mahi. Enjoy their delicious brunch or drop in for happy hour from 2:30 to 5:30 p.m. daily for drink specials and more. To make a reservation, visit royalhawaiianlb.com. On this episode, we speak with Mike and Mike, junior and senior, owners of the legendary Tiki Tea in Los Angeles, California. So I first started going to Tiki Tea somewhere around 1995 or so. It was a great place to grab a strong and tasty tropical drink on my way out to a night of clubbing in Hollywood. Back then, Ray Buen, the guy who opened it back in 1961, was still bartending. Ray was one of the original bartenders at Don the Beachcomber, documented as the very first tiki bar opening in 1934, just after Prohibition was lifted in the U.S., which was largely credited for creating many popular tropical cocktails. After getting his start there, he found his way to the Seven Seas, the Luau, Christian's Hut, the Palms, the Dresden, and many more, eventually settling at his own bar, the Tiki Tea. Today, the Tiki Tea is run by his son and grandson, who we talked to in this episode. As a longtime regular at the Tiki Tea, I'm excited to bring this episode to you. If you enjoy it, please share it on your social media, and I will love you forever. And so without further ado, I bring to you Mike and Mike, the father and son team of the legendary Tiki Tea.
Inside the Desert Oasis Room.
Hello, everyone. We are here at the Tiki Tea in Los Angeles, California. Some people call this Hollywood, right?
I've heard Hollywood. I've heard East Hollywood.
East Hollywood. Silver Lake.
I've heard a few different things.
And I'm here with Mike Sr. and Mike Jr., the co-owners of the legendary Tiki Tea started by Ray Buen. Thanks for joining me today, guys.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
We've been trying to do this for quite a while, and I'm glad that the stars lined up today. I think that there's a lot of people out there that are interested in hearing a lot of the history of the Tiki Tea. And I think a lot of our audience knows that Ray started this, your father and grandfather. And what I'm curious about is how he even got started bartending.
Well, going back, my dad came to this country when he was 18. And the first job he had was at the Figueroa Hotel. And he was a bellhop. And he did that for about 6 months, and then they said, "Hey, Ray, you're doing a good job. We're going to put you on the elevator." So my dad used to always joke, and he said, "Hey, you know, I'm not being a bellhop anymore. I'm being an elevator guy, and I'm moving on up."
Right.
So he did that for, I don't know, about a year or so, and then after that, he went to the Beverly Hills Hotel, and he started working over there. And the manager told him, he says, "You know, Prohibition's going to end, and we need a bartender."
So he was already out here before Prohibition ended.
Right, yeah. So what happened was they sent him to bartending school, and then Prohibition ended. And when it did, Don Beaumont Gunn just happened to be opening up Don the Beachcomber. And
right.
My dad applied for that, and he hired him.
Okay.
And that's how this all came about.
Well, how did he end up at Don the Beachcomber, though? Was that... Did he know somebody that was over there, or did he just happen to like see an opening and decide, "I'm going to apply"?
Well, I'm not quite sure about that, but you know, back in those days, Hollywood was full of, it was all Filipinos, And Filipinos at that time bartended. There were waiters, waiters, bartenders. They did all kinds of stuff. And, you know, that's when they started doing all this stuff.
Right. Yeah, more than likely, you probably heard it word of mouth.
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's kind of like, it's interesting to think, you know, the legacy that he's left behind and how it all would have been different if he, say, just ended up bartending at another bar, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You know, have you ever thought of it, of that before?
Not really. No, he's... That's he was just of, at the right know, time.
Yeah, just like at the right place at the right time.
Yeah. I've thought about that a lot, actually.
Have you really?
Like what I'd be doing or what you would have done or...
Well...
I mean, I have no idea what it would be, but I've thought about it.
Yeah.
Right. No, our lives would be a lot different.
Yeah, it would be completely different.
True.
I mean, like, because it's, you know, this is such a historical place now, right? It's this legendary bar, legendary old school tiki, you know. And he didn't just have this bar. I mean, he worked at a number of bars. He worked, we know, at Don the Beachcomber. And then he worked at the Luau and the Seven Seas, Christian's Hut, Dresden.
Right, yeah.
Something that I found interesting was that Christian's Hut, he was actually recruited to move to Catalina Island for that, right?
Yeah, he went there for two seasons. And that was right after they filmed Mutiny on the Bounty. And then he worked at Christian's Hut there for two seasons, yeah.
Wow. And they sought him out specifically.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, because back in those days, actually, you know, there's, well, Christian's Hut's not there anymore on the Isthmus, but actually Sven, he was over there and he had a picture that is on the wall.
Right.
And there's a picture of my dad and another bartender.
Right.
On the wall.
I believe it's still there.
Yeah, it's still there. Yeah.
He actually also worked at, I don't know if it's called the ballroom or the casino there in Avalon.
Okay.
That big
yeah.
there in Avalon.
I think they call that the, it was a casino, right?
Casino. Yeah, yeah. He bartended there for a little while too.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if it was like during the same period of time or I'm
right.
not sure.
Right. Okay. And do you guys know who that other guy is in that photo? Because I know what photo you're talking about. I think people have asked before.
Yeah, no, I have no idea.
Okay. It'd be interesting to know if he was also another tiki bartender or if he was just kind of a guy that just worked bars, you know, and nothing yeah. specific as far as tropical cocktails.
Yeah. It would be interesting to find out. Yeah, I have no idea.
Well, we'll have to do some research on that. How did he end up over at the Luau and the Seven Seas?
Well, right after he was on the Beachcomber, he only worked there briefly for not quite a year. And on the Seven Seas, they opened that place up, and they offered my dad a head bartender job, and that was included $10 more per week. And $10 in the 30s was a hell of a lot of money. My mom told me, she said, when your dad got that job, they could pay the rent for their bungalow for the month, stock their refrigerator, and still have a little bit of money left to go out and party.
Wow, that's how much $10 bought back then, huh?
Well, a loaf of bread was 5 cents, so right. My dad was making...
Yeah, that was good money back then.
Very good money.
So he got recruited out of Don's to go there.
Yeah.
And then I assume that he took a lot of his drinks with him when he was over there.
Well, yeah, of course. All bartenders do, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, like... I guess what I'm getting at is like, you know, the drinks that he invented, right? I've always said that, and with the exception of the Tiki Tea, but most other bars, the business owner runs the business and the bartenders run the bar. You know, the bartenders make up the drinks and they set up the drink program, that kind of thing, and the business owners basically run their business, right? So having said that, with Don the Beachcomber, it is my assumption that Ray invented a lot of the drinks that Don took the credit for.
Well, Don, according to what my dad told me, that a lot of things he wanted to do himself, certain drinks, because he was a showman.
And, yeah.
He wanted to be, you know, make whatever drinks there were, he had to make them himself. But a lot of the drinks the Filipinos created.
Right.
And then, of course, you know, he would take credit for them.
Right, right. As many business owners do.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. It was my understanding that it was my grandfather and three other Filipino guys originally in the bar. So I'm assuming my grandfather and those three other guys made up most of the drinks.
You see, that's what I've always argued with people, you know. And then there are some people that will argue, no, Don invented all those drinks. And I've always said, well, you know, I'm sure he invented a lot of the drinks. I don't think he invented all of them. I would even venture to say that he probably, you know, only invented maybe half of them, because the bartenders are always coming up with stuff, right? A customer will come in and say, you know, I like something that tastes cinnamon with, you know, whatever these different flavors are that they prefer. And so what the bartender does is he makes up a drink for that customer, and it ends up getting stuck on the menu, right?
See, I think back then, though, I mean, it was so new.
Sure.
That people didn't even have that concept.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Like, I hadn't even thought about that. I want something that tastes like cinnamon. Like, that would be, like, so foreign back then.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So I think this is my thought on it is, you know, he gave him the rum, he gave him the different ingredients, and he said, here, make this taste good.
Okay.
I mean, that's my guess.
That's fair.
Yeah.
You know? That's fair.
Again,
It's like the same scenario. Well, yeah, a lot of people say that, you know, Trader Vic's, Victor Bergeron was responsible for the Mai Tai, but there's a lot of controversy on
right.
that, because they say, well, actually, it was Don's drink, and he just improvised on it.
Right.
Took the credit for it. So, you know, who knows?
Well, you know, I think, sorry to interrupt, but I think right. a lot of that was going on back then, you know,
yeah.
in terms of, because, again, it was so new.
It was new, yeah. It was a new concept, and people were trying to run with it. You know, according to Jeff Barry, he wrote a chapter in one of his books about the Mai Tai, and he talked about that, where, based on his research, he saw this and that, and, you know, he made taste comparisons with just this drink versus the Mai Tai, and he said, you draw your conclusions from that. And based on what he wrote, the conclusion that I drew is that Vic Bergeron tried to reverse engineer a QB cooler from Don the Beachcomber, and he came close and called that the Mai Tai. That's based on the information that Jeff wrote in the book. So,
yeah, I mean, that's definitely a possibility, sure.
Now, the blood and sand. We know for sure that Ray invented the blood and sand at the Dresden.
Well, yeah. The blood and sand was, yeah.
That was one of his.
Yeah. Well, they still make it over there, but
yeah.
their recipe is not the same. They make theirs with rum.
Yeah, they have to. I was there a few weeks ago and I ordered a blood and sand, but I had to ask for them to make it traditional way. Or they would have made it their way, which is completely different.
Yeah.
Well, you know the history better than I do, but my grandfather was the first bartender there at the Dresden in 1946.
Actually, 1950.
50.
The fellow that owned it, his name was Byron. I can't remember his last name. But Carl Ferraro bought the Dresden from Byron.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Ray was the first bartender there.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, he worked at numerous bars. I mean, not just tropical bars, but just numerous general bars.
So, why did he start Tiki Tea?
What happened was, actually, my grandfather built this building in 1940 on my mother's side, and he repaired musical. Well, he came from here from Czechoslovakia, and he played an orchestra, violin, viola, cello. And he also conducted, and that was in Oklahoma City. And then the talkies came in, and a lot of people went and started doing the movies, making music for the movies and everything. Well, he started repairing musical instruments. And he and his wife built this building, and they repaired musical instruments in here for quite some time, and then they moved down to Orange County. And in the meantime, this place was pretty vacant. My dad always had the idea to open up a bartending school here. And that's what he was thinking. And one day in the paper, he was reading, and a fellow was selling his liquor license in Whittier. So he said, well, go on out there and put a bid on it. So my dad went out there, and he put a bid on the license. And there were three other guys that bid on the liquor license. And the fellow that was selling it, he took my dad's bid. So when he was leaving the establishment, one of the other guys was outside waiting for him. He says, hey, Ray, I'll give you $1,000 now if you sell me the liquor license that you just got. And thank God my dad didn't sell it to him. He just said, well, give me your name and phone number. I'll call you back. I want to check with my wife first. So when he got back, he told my mom, you know, I got the liquor license. He says, well, what do you want to do? He says, well, why don't you just have this little place down here, and instead of making this into a bartending school, make this into a bar, tropical, your own bar.
Okay.
And he says, yeah, it's a good idea. And that's how everything evolved around. So the moral of this story is, behind every great man, there is a woman.
A great woman.
I was going to say, you know, your grandmother doesn't get a whole lot of recognition. She was bartending here too, wasn't she?
Yep. My mom and my dad opened this in 1961. They were open from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., 7 days a week.
No, 11 a.m. to 2 a.m.
2 a.m.
Oh, 11, yeah. 11.
11 in the morning to,
until 2 in
two
the morning.
At night. Two, yeah, 2 in
and
the
that's
morning.
That's what was.
Every day.
Every day.
7 days a week.
And that's when the studio next door here was Elliott Artists. And like I said before, 12 o'clock, this place was packed because the studio crew came in. And they were all drinking and then going back to work. That's when my dad had beer at that time. But then the studio closed a couple years later. And then my dad kept the beer and they eventually phased that out. Because you can get beer anywhere, but you're not going to get these drinks
right.
Because we specialize in them.
Right, right.
But yeah, I don't... how long did she work here for? Like, actually behind the bar?
Oh, quite a few years, yeah.
Because she worked the door for many years.
Right. And it was just the two of them that whole time?
Well, yeah, but it wasn't like it is now. I mean,
okay.
Yeah, it
okay.
wasn't nearly as busy
yeah,
back
there
then.
There were people that okay. came in, but it was a lot quieter. And
even during the lunch hour when the studios were open,
yeah,
it was still
a lot of, you know,
so manageable with just the two of them.
Tropical music and Martin Denny and all that stuff.
Well, from my understanding, it did get pretty busy then.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the reasons that he decided to get rid of the beer.
Oh.
Because it got pretty crazy in here. People just... They didn't really drink any of the tropical drinks. They just wanted the beer.
They just wanted the beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when you have beer and regular alcohol, there's a difference between your patrons. Because usually when people drink beer, they get a little bit rowdy.
Okay.
Or rowdier, yeah. Especially, you know, they'll sit
there
a lot.
It brings
longer.
A different customer.
Yeah, it's a
different
customer.
Crowd, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
That's interesting. You know, like, so the Tiki was open in 1961, and Don the Beachcomber in Hollywood didn't close until, like, 1985, right? Or 1986, something
yeah.
like that, right?
Yeah.
So that's, like, 20-plus years of coexisting. And something that I've always been curious about, and Boris and I were wondering about this, was did Ray ever... Or did either of you guys ever go to Don the Beachcomber? Was there any kind of like, you know, camaraderie going back and forth, or just not matter anymore? And was there a rivalry? Were there people that, you know, that preferred one over the other, or did they just not even notice?
No. Well, my dad had customers that followed him from where he went, because before he opened this place, my dad, well, I'm guessing, he probably worked 60 to maybe 80 other bars.
That many bars?
Yeah. A lot of them tropical, but a lot of them just regular standard bars.
Yeah.
You know, because my dad was always working.
He never stayed in one place too long, though. He always jumped around.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And do you know, was that just because he got bored, or was that because he got recruited by different bar owners?
Probably both.
Yeah, I don't know, honestly.
Okay, interesting. What was, this is a question I've always been curious about, too. What was Ray like? I've heard all kinds of different stories. I've heard that he could be brash. I've heard that he could be funny. I've heard he could be entertaining. Or is it a little bit of all of it?
Well, at certain times, yes. But my dad loved people. That's why I liked to bartend. You know, he liked to talk to people and associate with people.
Right.
You know, and... that's a good mark of a bartender, you know, because you got to be able to talk to people and, you know, and be a good person, you know.
Yeah.
You got to like people.
Yeah. You
know, yeah, I think he honestly enjoyed bartending.
Yeah.
He liked the aspect of interacting with people.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I think that was probably his favorite part of it.
Actually, you know, if you look at everything in here, my dad did. I helped him and a couple other guys, but... I was here most of the time. All the bamboo, the cork, the tapa cloth. My dad brought down the nipas, the 2x4s, 2x8s. If you gave him a saw, a hammer, a drill, a 2x4, 2x8. He went to town.
He would do something with it. Yeah.
He put in the waterfall. Everything in here, he did.
So the tapa on the walls, he did the tapa. Or you did the tapa?
Well, he did it.
Okay.
Tell him the story about you originally got all this stuff from Oceanic Arts.
Right.
That was...
Well, not all of it.
Well, the stuff you did get, but didn't you tell me the story you got it out of, like, that's when they didn't even have a business. They were selling it out of their house. Their garage.
Well, originally they were, they started out of their house.
But you went down there, right? And you...
My dad knew them. He bought some stuff, but there were other places. I can't remember the names. There were other places to buy this stuff at.
Sure, back then, right.
Which, were all no longer around.
Yeah, Sea and Jungle comes to mind.
San Fernando Road. That was a great place.
Yeah, and I'm drawing a blank now. God, I'm trying to remember. I just talked to Sven about it. This is how I know I'm getting old, because I forget about things.
Join the club.
Senior moment.
So I want to mention, I know that there's this thing that used to exist here called the Left-Handers Club. So Junior used to tell me stories about this. Maybe you could tell the listeners a little bit about how this worked.
Okay, what my dad did, he's with the regulars. He started it was a club where you paid like $10 to join. You got a card that said the Left-Handers Club. And the thing was that you couldn't drink a drink with a straw. You had to pick it up and drink it with your hand. And if you were right-handed, you had to drink with your left hand. If you're left-handed, vice versa.
Right.
And every time, say, if you're right-handed, you picked it up, you got fined like 50 cents or a dollar. At the end of the year, my dad, all the money that he collected through a luau.
Right.
And everything was free, the food, the entertainment, the booze, everything. It was a lot of fun.
That's a lot of people drinking with the wrong hand.
Yeah. Well, we have video.
or the right hand. I have actually a DVD of that.
Yeah,
of that.
Well, you've seen the video.
Yeah, I've seen the video. I've got a copy. Okay. Charlie hooked me up with that.
Okay,
so,
all right.
Yeah, that's cool stuff.
Yeah, that was 1964, 65.
Yeah, it was early to mid-60s, and I just know that all this stuff happened before I was even born, which is, is what kills me.
Yeah, I think that, how long did that last? I think it only lasted a couple years.
About 4 or 5 years. They were always inside. They were like a hall that my dad went and rented, because you'd have to have a big piece of property or so. And he rented out local halls and decorated it. And then I had everybody come in and party.
And I saw in the video that there were Filipino dancers in there, too. They were dancing the bamboo stick dance, the tinkling.
Fire dancing. The tinkling. He had belly dancing. You name it, he had it in there.
That's a lot of people screwing up with their left hand.
Yeah, there were a lot of people at those.
I mean, if that whole thing was paid for by the people paying the fine for using their wrong hand, that's a lot of mistakes.
Unique too, though. A lot of the Filipino guys they cook Filipino food: adobo, pancit, inihel, baboy, all that stuff, man.
Man, that sounds great. That sounds great.
Yeah, it was a great luau's.
Now, I think that most of the people that are fans of the tiki know the story behind the raisin steak. But for the people that don't know, can you tell the story to those people about how the raisin steak came to be?
Yeah, there's a card that's right above there. There's a small mask on the wall there, and it has Gil the First, 1968. And his name was Gil Carriagan. And he still comes in once in a while.
Oh, so he does.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And his favorite drink was the Antin Antin. And the Antin Antin in Tagalog, Filipino, means witch or witch's brew. And
that's, witch's brew, yeah.
That's what he always liked to drink. And one night he was sitting at the bar and he was drinking it. And he ordered another one. And my dad picked up another mix, which is now the raisin steak. And he served it to him. And when he tasted it, he says, "Ray, this isn't right. Taste it." So my dad took a sip. He started to throw it out, and he says, "No, do you remember what you put in that drink?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, make me another one." So he made him another one, and he took it and he passed it down. The guy sitting next to him, he said, "Take a sip and pass it down." So Ray was taking a sip out of the drink, and they liked it and said, "Hey, this is a good drink. What's the name of it?" And then Gil said, "I don't know. It's Ray's Mistake." That's how we got the name for the drink.
That's awesome.
And that became our signature drink.
I always forget if it was the wrong syrup or if it was the wrong liquor that was in there, but it was the wrong syrup that he put in there.
Yeah, the mix.
So
yeah.
Is the Ray's Mistake today exactly the same as it was then? Or has it been modified in any way?
No.
It's exactly the same.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I know, because I make it.
Oh, yeah. I'm just curious, like, if you modified it for any reason, for, like, you know, cost adjustments or for, you know, palate adjustments or anything like that.
Every once in a while, I'll make it and somebody will request it with rum. Because they don't want the gin.
Because they don't want the gin.
Even though you can't taste the gin in it, I personally don't think you can taste the gin.
Well, does the rum make a difference? Does it taste...
I can't personally taste the difference.
I would assume that if you used a light rum, that it would taste probably the same.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, like, another thing that I was curious about is what it was like in here during the lean years, you know, during the 80s, for example.
Yeah, but, you know, during the 80s, that was disco time.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of people that would come in here because there was a, I don't know if it's still there in Hollywood, it's called the Circus Disco, and that was a big place. A lot of people went to that. And they would come in here and get tanked up first because they might, we got to have some drinks here because you go to the disco and the drinks suck there. It's because you go there to dance and party.
And they knew the drinks were stronger here, too.
Well, yeah, and so people would come in here and get pretty loaded, and then they go to disco, and then sometimes they come back afterwards and they have some drinks. But we had a good influx of people during that time, that, you know, the disco period.
I'm guessing one of the reasons we made it through the 80s would be because, I mean, back then there weren't a whole lot of options when it came to tiki.
Okay. But were people coming here because they were seeking out tiki?
I was alive, but it was before my time, but,
right.
You know, being in here, but I think some were probably seeking tiki and others were just looking for a good drink.
Yeah, you know.
Regardless of whether it was tiki or not.
I started coming here in 1995. I wasn't a regular by any means. I would come maybe once every 4 to 6 months, you know. And I would come here also because I was in my mid-20s, and I'd go clubbing in Hollywood. And we'd come here because we got better drinks, right? We got strong drinks that tasted better. And we'd get the buzz going before we'd go off to the club, and then we'd have their shitty drinks, you know.
Yeah, even today, you don't really go to a club to have a drink. You go there to party and, you know, hang out.
You know, I wish I knew then what I know now, because obviously, like, if I knew then what I know now, I probably would have never went to that next club. I probably would have just stayed here and enjoyed myself, you know, and having good drinks. But, you know, I was trying to meet girls, and
you got to experiment.
You know.
Sure, yeah, it's human nature. I mean, that's what most people do. They club hop, they bar hop.
Right, yeah. Right. So, having said that, how has the bar changed over the years from the 60s to the 70s to the 80s and, you know, even up until now?
Well, I don't know. There's more people, that's for sure. And now with the advent of more tiki places opening up, which is good, because there was a period of time where the tiki thing was going down. Because, you know,
it was falling out of fashion or something, falling out of style.
Drinks, a lot of the bartenders were making them right. You know,
right, right.
You know, and
what do you think happened there? Do you think people just started getting lazy, or do you think it was a cost issue, or?
Well, yeah, it was just, first of all, they probably didn't have the right ingredients.
Right.
Because a lot of people were using, like, grenadine like crazy. And grenadine has its point in certain drinks, but you don't put grenadine in everything.
Right,
you can sweeten a drink or from other beans.
Right.
You know, and if you put grenadine, it's the same friggin' taste. You know?
Sure, I mean, there's been numerous times, even since I've been here, you know, I'll make a Mai Tai and somebody will say, hey, no, this is good, but can you add some grenadine to this?
Wow.
And I sure, if you want grenadine, I'll put grenadine in for you. But, you know,
right.
Traditionally a Mai Tai is not supposed to have that. So I think what it is, a lot of bartenders, they started making drinks like, kind of like, I want to say maybe Hawaiian style.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like, you know, some pineapple and rum and whatever.
Hawaiian style is a good term. Martin Kate uses that for a quote-unquote incorrectly made Mai Tai or wrong Mai Tai. He calls it a Hawaiian style Mai Tai.
Right, yeah.
Right. Because, you know, the tropical drinks, you know, they were invented at the close of Prohibition. They came out you know, rum-based drinks came out of the Caribbean, essentially. You know,
right.
None of these drinks really came from Hawaii, but they found their way to Hawaii when history kind of almost got forgotten, and people started associating Mai Tais with being invented in Hawaii with pineapple juice and grenadine in them.
Sure, they made their way to Hawaii because it fits the ambiance.
Right.
You know,
right.
You think a Mai Tai, yeah. You think Hawaii, you know.
Yeah, there's still a lot of people that come in here and they still think that tropical drinks started in Hawaii. And I tell them, no, they started right here in Hollywood.
yeah, right here.
They go, no.
Yeah, right here in Hollywood, McKinnon Place at Donley Beachcomber. Right. So going back to that, knowing that Ray and the other Filipino bartenders invented a lot of those drinks. And you guys, when you first started working here and you started making those drinks, you know, you were obviously using the recipes that Ray had invented. What are some of the drinks that you guys invented that you're serving on the menu today?
Well, Mike, you have that one.
Which one's that?
The one with the... I was
about to say I haven't really invented any drinks. I've been here going on 18 years now.
What's the one with the
Mike special?
I'm drawing a blank now.
Yeah.
The sidekick. The Tiki sidekick.
Yeah.
And now I actually didn't invent that. One of our regulars, semi-regulars, who doesn't come in that often anymore, we were in here. It was just myself and him, and I think maybe my brother was here at the time. And he said, hey, let's invent a drink. And I'm like, sure, let's do that. You know, so we kind of came up with his drink. It's just Kahlua, Bailey's, and bourbon. And it tasted good. And he's like, hey, what should we call this? And we were joking around. And that was back when the cell phone, the sidekick, was around. And it was this huge brick. And he pulled it out of his pocket and he put it on the bar. And I'm like, that thing's ridiculous. Let's call it the sidekick. So that's how we came up with the name, the Tiki Sidekick.
Okay.
Kahlua, Bailey's, and bourbon. Just those three ingredients?
That's it.
Oh, interesting.
In equal parts.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So there you go. You guys now, you heard it here first. You have a Tiki Tea drink recipe now.
There you go.
This episode is sponsored in part by Tiki Diablo, artist, carver, builder, and mug maker. With an extensive client list including Mission Tiki Drive-In, Tonga Hut Palm Springs, Tiki Co., Hennessy's Tavern, Walt Disney Imagineering, Lowe's, and Home Depot, plus art installations at Latitude 29 and Undertow. For custom art, tikis, mugs, or build-outs, find him on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at Tiki Diablo, or on his website coming soon, tikidiablo.com. This episode is also sponsored in part by Tiki Tony. When the tide is high and the swell is mellow, you can find Tiki Tony in his beachcomber shack whittling driftwood tikis and toucans. And when the sun is shining, he's swaying in the hammock doodling mugs, logos, or illustrations on pieces of driftwood for tiki bars and restaurants. Tiki Tony works closely with his wife Aline on new mug designs and projects. This summer, he has mug designs being produced by Tiki Diablo, Ikum Bukum, and Tiki Farm. Watch out for limited edition glassware, prints, and even a mermaid plush doll. Find his designs at Trader Sam's in both Disneyland and Disney World, on the glassware for Tonga Hut in North Hollywood and Palm Springs, and on the glassware at Undertow in Phoenix, Arizona. Kick off your deck shoes, grab a bamboo straw, and relax with Tiki Tony in his beachcomber shack while sipping from one of his original tiki mugs when following him on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. This episode is brought to you in part by Steadfast Pomade. Steadfast Pomade is a strong-holding, medium-bodied, water-based styling product for men and women, which leaves your hair looking slick, neat, and shiny with a clean, fresh scent. Its unique formula allows you to easily restyle your hair throughout the day and washes out with ease. Steadfast Pomade is American-made and veteran-owned. Available in original and anchor hold, get yours today at steadfastpomade.com. Tame the waves and keep it steadfast.
So what about, we were talking about this earlier, Mike, about the last beer. So let's get the story to the last beer because, you know, obviously we're recording this outside of hours. So we're enjoying a couple beers here before the tiki opens for the day.
Yes.
And, you know, the last beer used to be something that was on the bar for many, many years. I don't see it anymore.
Well, we have so much stuff.
It's here.
There,
it's here though. Somewhere, yeah. I think.
Oh, it's just lost behind all the
stuff.
All right. The story how we got that was as a joke. Charlie that comes in here and helps out because people were always asking for beer, and we said, "Well, we have no beer." So he says, "Well, he got a bottle of beer and he's put $10 or $20 on it as a joke."
Right.
And we put it back there. And a lot of people say, you know, do you have any beer? And no. I said, well, you have a beer right there. Yeah, but it's $20. He says, well, we thought, okay, no, who's going to spend $20 on a beer? And lo and behold, there's a lot of guys were saying, you know what? I can't drink these drinks. I have to have a beer. I'm a beer drinker. And they would actually buy the beer.
Right.
You know, and it's like, I would laugh because, like, you actually spend $20 for a beer.
Right.
And they did.
Well, the last time that it was up there, you guys had a price of $25 on it. And I.
Yeah, but it was a better beer. It was a Chimay.
Oh, yeah. Well, I
wouldn't put $25 on a Foster's.
That's right. It was a Foster's.
It was a Foster's, okay. Yeah.
There was one time where I almost said, fuck it, I'm going to buy the last beer because I thought it was going to be funny. Right. I bought the last beer. But then after somebody buys the last beer, you put up another last beer.
Well, what it is we have the beer on the counter, and then we had one in the cooler that was cold. So if somebody actually ordered the beer, we'd serve them the cold beer.
Okay.
I have a funny story about that, actually. One day, it was fairly early, maybe like 5 or 6 o'clock. This guy and these two girls come in, and they're drinking at the bar, and you could tell the guy wasn't really into the tropical drinks, so he's like, hey, you know, you have any beer? And I'm like, yeah, we have the last beer. And I pointed to the beer, and he looked at me, and he goes, yeah, but it's like $20. And he's like, yeah, you know, that's cool. And he bought it. He gave me the $20, and I went to go get the beer, and I went to go give it to him. And he goes, oh, no, it's okay. You can put it back up on the bar. And I'm like, you just gave me $20 for the beer. You don't want it? He's like, yeah, I just wanted to say I bought a beer at the Tiki. So essentially, he gave me $20 for free.
Yeah.
You know, there was also another guy, and like Mike said, you know, we had the one on the bar, and we had one on the cooler, and the guy said, okay, I'll buy the beer. So I got him a cold one. He says, no, I don't want that one. I want that one with the sign on it. It says, the last beer. So he actually drank that one, which was warm.
That's right. I remember.
He wanted the label.
The label, yeah.
He wanted to put it on his shelf and say he got the last beer.
And he didn't want the cold one. He said, I want that one because...
That's funny. I, the stories like this is what kind of endears this bar to me. You had told me a story one time. We were outside smoking cigars. And I have to bring this story up because I thought it was hilarious. About the kid who used to walk past the Tiki on his way home from school every day. You know which kid I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a school down the street here, Thomas Starr King, and every time when those kids would get out of school and walk up the street here to catch against the bus, this kid, man, the door was open and he'd always throw a rock inside here. I'd go out there and he'd run down the street and I go, yeah, you son of a bitch. He'd go, F you. I go, F you.
You can say it if you want.
Yeah, but he'd do this all the time. You know, and I'm going like, God, you know, and then he'd swear at me and I'd swear at him, but you know, he's a kid. What can you do?
Right.
But he would always do that. And then it's not just that. He would take gum.
Right.
And he would like chew it and he'd throw it right at the doorway.
Uh-huh. So somebody would step in it,
yeah. And then, you know, God, this guy was a pain in the ass.
Whatever happened to that kid? Did he ever come back in here as an adult?
Well, I don't know. He did. I don't think he'd say anything, but maybe he would. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he won't say anything, but he'll tell his friends, yeah, you know what I used to do when I was little? And I used to walk by here and throw rocks in the bar.
Well, there used to be a teacher that used to come from King. In the summertime when school was out, he'd always come in here and he says, oh, Mike, Ray, serve me a goddamn drink. I don't have to deal with those little bastards anymore. And he'd go on ahead and come out and he says, man, summer's out. I don't know, because he says, man, I can't deal with these kids, man, because they tell me, they just went my class and everything, and I can't do anything about it because they know their rights. And they say, you know, you can't touch me.
Right.
And all I can say is go to the principal. And the principal's the next day, he's in my class disrupting everything. And I said, go to the principal, and that's all I can do. And then because they know their rights.
Yeah. Wow.
His outlet was a tiki drink.
Yeah. Well, he says, yeah, it's summertime. I don't have to deal with those guys anymore.
That's hilarious. Anything else funny happen here? Any of the funny stories?
Well, if you really want to know a funny story, stuff you can't write in a script, but at one time there's parking meters out here, and the RTD, they took a couple of them out because the RTD used to park their bus here as a layover zone because Sunset curves to the left at the corner and Hollywood Boulevard starts. So they didn't want too many buses on the routes, so they wanted to lay them over, so they were staggered. So they used to park here for 15 minutes or so there weren't a lot of buses on the route. And I was cleaning out the place one day, and it was about 11 o'clock in the afternoon, and I happened to walk outside, and there's a guy laying down on the sidewalk, and he's singing away, and he's beating off. And I'm looking and going like, wow, I mean, this guy's in his own mode. I mean, he's in heaven. And okay. So, and then at the time, this was Channel 28. And
right.
People were walking, some of the ladies were walking, and they see him, and the bus driver's looking down, you know, and he's like, oh, this guy's in his own,
right,
you know, in his own mood. So I go about my business, and I can walk out again. And the guy's still there, but then the fire department is up here on Hillhurst, and it just so happens all the trucks happen to come from a call, and they were finished. And the last truck, it was the hook and ladder truck.
Right.
The last guy, he looks down and he sees this guy masturbating. So he calls, and they all stop, and they come back, and the captain, they kick the guy and say, hey, man, put your pants back up. He puts them up, and he goes, oh, you can't be doing that. You want to go to jail? And he goes, oh, no, sir, I don't want to go to jail. He said, well, you can't do that in public. You know, if you do that, you're going to go to jail.
Right.
And he says, well, I don't want to go to jail. And he says, and they reprimand him for like about 10 minutes or so. And he sits on the ledge over here, and he's watching as they turn the corner to go up to the station. As soon as the last truck turns, he looks, drops down his pants, and goes back to town again. And I couldn't stop laughing. I said, you can't write this stuff.
It's
a script for TV or a movie. I mean, it was funnier than hell. And he was there for, I don't know, another hour or two doing his business.
I heard a funny story about Nicolas Cage and the Green Lizard.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage used to come in. Actually, another couple brought him in, and they sat at the corner here. And he parked a black Rolls Royce in front, and people were coming up, and hey, Mike, who's the Rolls is that? And I said, it was Nicolas Cage and Patricia Arquette, because that's when they were married, and he was living up here in Los Feliz. And a couple of regular customers that come in here, they went over and started bugging him and talking to him, and they ended up buying him a Green Lizard. And at that time, he didn't know what that was. That was just before he was up to get the Oscar.
Right.
For leaving Las Vegas. So he was very inquisitive, and they said, hey, which is, well, Green Lizard is shot at 151 and it's loaded with green chartreuse, which is 110. So you're drinking, you know, 100% alcohol, 200 proof to be exact. And anyway, it took him a long time. He was asking questions, well, what do you do with this? And they're saying, well, Nick, go ahead and shoot it, man. So You'll enjoy it. So eventually he did shoot it down, and his eyeballs just about popped out. What was funny about the story is that the next week, one of the guys came back in here, and he said, Mike, Ray, I got to tell you, the other day I was over here at Costco in Los Feliz, and I was checking out. I look over, and here's Nicolas Cage and his son in the next checkout stand. And I said, hey, Mr. Cage, how you doing? And he looked at me. He says, do I know you? And he says, yeah, have you been back to the Tiki T, the little place on Sunset? And then Nicolas Cage said to him, he said, oh, yeah, you're one of those guys that bought me that fucked up drink. And they started laughing.
Where did that drink come from? Did one of you guys make that up, or did that come from another bar or a customer?
No, that's a standard drink. It's been around for years.
Okay.
Yeah.
God, that's such a nasty drink. Yeah. I call that drink the devil's semen.
Yeah, it's like gasoline.
A couple years ago, I have a Green Lizard story. So a couple years ago, I actually have two. Mikey put one in front of me for my birthday. And so, and I'd never drank it before. I never wanted to. And, you know, peer pressure, everybody saying, no, you got to drink it. It's your birthday. You got to drink it. Come on. And then Mikey's calling me names, you know. So, all right, I'll drink it. I drank it, and my throat just seized, right? It just seized. And everybody's laughing, and I wanted to laugh with them, but not only could I not laugh, I couldn't breathe, you know? I couldn't even cough because, like, my throat was just seized. So then Mikey puts a shot of tequila, clear tequila, in a little glass, slides it over, and he goes, here, drink this to wash it down. And the tequila tasted like a glass of water because that green lizard is so fucking nasty.
Yeah, it's pretty hardcore.
Oh, yeah. That
yeah. Like... And my second story was that Alan, who was just a semi-regular, we see him every once in a while, right? He wanted to do a green lizard, because he likes him.
And he's the only guy I know who actually likes the green lizard.
He actually likes him. And he's like, hey, do a green lizard with me. And I said, I'm not going to drink that. And he goes, I'll buy it. And I said, I don't care. It's not about the money. I can afford the green lizard. I just don't want to drink that. You know, it's the devil's semen, right? Yeah. And he said, come on, just drink it with me. And he's like, what if I have Mikey light it for you? And I said, light it on fire? And he said, yeah, I'll have him light it on fire. Wouldn't that be cool? And I thought, okay, cool. He can light it on fire. I'll let a lot of it burn off so it won't be that bad, right? And then I'll drink it afterwards. So we put them on the bar side by side. And Mikey lights both of them on fire. And I let it sit for a little bit, waiting for it to, like I said, burn off.
Burn the alcohol off, yeah.
And then Mikey says, you know, if you don't drink those now, you're not going to be able to pick up those glasses because that fire is going to make it really hot. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, well, how do I put this out? And they're like, just blow it out. So I'm trying to blow it, and it's not blowing out, right? So I think it was Charlie. He says, just give it one strong blow. So I gave it one strong blow, and what it does is it blows the lit alcohol over onto the bar, still on fire.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're like, holy shit. So now we don't know what to do, right? And then I tell Mikey, throw a towel over it. So Mike throws a towel over it, and what happens to the towel? That starts to light on fire.
On fire, yeah.
So Charlie runs over and he says, oh, for God's sake. And he grabbed, I think, another towel, right? And he just stomped it out.
Yeah, he did it, like, calmly.
Yeah.
You know? I was
like we were a bunch of idiots, you know?
Yeah. I actually have a pretty good story about a green lizard. This is probably about maybe 9, 10, 12 years, maybe 10 years ago. I was actually working the door. It was a Friday, Saturday night. So it was fairly busy in here, probably around 8 or 9 o'clock. And this big party came in, and they sat in the table just to the right of the door. And it was one of the girls' birthday. So, you know, I already had like a drink or two. And I'm like, oh, it's her birthday? I'll get you a shot. So I go up to the bar, and I get her a
green. They were probably all excited that she was going to get a shot.
So I get her a green lizard. And I sit it on the table, and I don't know what I was thinking, but I lit it on fire. Which was a terrible move because
everything in retrospect.
Yeah,
right?
I don't know how it happened, but it ended up tipping over onto the table.
Oh,
so literally the whole table set on fire.
Wow,
that's why we don't light them.
Yeah, and it was packed in here.
Yeah,
so like the table and like half of the bar literally like cleared out.
Yeah,
everybody jumped up. Everybody was freaking out. So I ran to the bar and I got like a wet towel and I put it out, but. Yeah, it was.
Well, when you lit the pair of green lizards that Alan and I were drinking on fire, I remember after we put that fire out, I remember you looking at me saying, "Never going to do that again."
Yeah, that's the last time,
and you never did it.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, that was the last time. So if anybody comes in here asking for it,
I've seen you do that like since then, but I'm not doing that.
Yeah,
again.
You're saying, yeah, well, no fire in the tiki.
No fire. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I know your original backgrounds, and I don't think that a lot of people know your original backgrounds. I know that you were working at Hertz before, Mike.
Yep.
And where were you working before, Mikey?
I really wasn't. I just gotten out of college. I started here when I was 25, so I was like 20, 22, 23.
Right.
So I don't think at the time when I started here I was working. That's one of the reasons.
So this is like your really kind of your first place then?
Yeah, I mean, I worked like in high school, you know, like a job here and there, but nothing serious. This is like my first like serious. I've been here 18 years. It's like my first job. Really.
Did you guys both know that this was where you were going to be? Like it's the family business. Or did you guys each have original plans before this?
I was born and raised in this, so I just kind of fell into it. Because I was always around my dad bartending and you know, around bars, restaurants. Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't expect to be here this long.
Yeah.
You know, I ended up coming in here because, you know, my grandfather became ill.
Right.
And he bartended up until he was 88.
Wow, that's an accomplishment.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
He definitely was slowing way down, and you come in, and you could tell he wasn't going to do it much longer. So I figured, yeah, I'll come in here, I'd help out, and just keep the place going, and eventually I'd end up doing something else, because I went to school for something else. And
what'd you go to school for?
I double majored in design and business.
Oh, okay.
At Loyola. And
well, you're using the business part.
Yeah, yeah, well.
No, that didn't go to waste.
Sure.
Well, I had the same thing. Went to college and a degree in business and marketing, but here I am slinging booze.
Yeah. Well, we don't always end up where we think we're going to end up. You know, that's just how life works.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, but coming to the end of this, you know, I think that people are curious to know. I mean, the Tiki T obviously is a legendary spot and is very well loved by, you know, not only the Tiki community, but, you know, all kinds of other different genres, lowbrow culture people and hot rodders and, you know, Hollywood hipsters and all that kind of stuff, celebrities and non-celebrities alike. Being that it's a Tiki bar, it's got such a, you know, and it's been here for 56 years. We just celebrated 56th anniversary. Mm-hmm. It's got such a great personality to it. Do you guys have any Tiki spaces in your own homes?
I have a small collection of Tiki mugs that I've never actually purchased any of these.
You can tell the truth, because I know the truth.
What's the truth?
That you don't.
Yeah, no, I really haven't purchased any of these mugs.
No, that you don't have a Tiki space in
your... Oh, no, I don't. Yeah. I really don't. But I do have a small collection of mugs that people have given me, because they assume I'm into Tiki when it comes to my personal life at home. And I think eventually, if I don't find a place to, like, a place to put them, you know, specifically for them, I'll probably end up getting rid of them, because my wife really doesn't want them where they're at.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm not morally opposed to it. Like, if I had a bigger place, I've been in some, you know, people's bar, home bars, where, like, it's actually very, the setups they have are very cool.
Right.
I just don't know if my wife would go along with me having that in my backyard.
I get it.
Backyard,
but, so, you know, like you said to me one time, that you get enough Tiki at work. And I get that too. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
Right.
You know? I mean, like, you can't escape work if you come home to the exact same thing, right?
True. And I have truth be told, I have a little bit of OCD. And working in a Tiki bar, especially like a Tiki bar like this, where it's very cluttered and there's just stuff everywhere. And I mean, I've learned to let it go. But when I first started, it really bothered me.
It really drove you crazy.
Yeah, I like stuff very neat and very in its place.
Yeah, your house, and it shows in your house. Your house is very neat, clean, orderly.
Well, not anymore with my two kids. But now it looks like a toy store.
Yeah.
But yeah, you really have to let that go when you work in a traditional Tiki bar. There's some Tiki bars that are modern and a little more slick, and it's not quite as cluttered.
But you know what? Even here amidst the chaos behind the bar, if I look at it right now, it still is orderly the way that you have everything up there, the way that you have all of the regulars' mugs on the shelves.
Right.
And the way that you have everything kind of put away.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when I first started, the way it looks right now would still have bothered me.
Yeah. I can tell because, look, I'm OCD too.
Yeah.
So in my house, I'm exactly like here. Every label's facing forward.
Sure.
Every mug is like, you know, like you have three cobras that are all lined up, all facing the same direction.
Right.
It's like that in my pantry, right? Like, all the labels are facing forward, smallest in the front, largest in the back. I try to group like items together. If you open my wallet, my bills are stored sequentially, all face forward, all face up.
Hey, look at my wallet. It's the exact same thing right now.
Right? So, yeah. And my wife is a complete opposite. If you open her medicine cabinet, everything's facing the wrong way. So I don't know which one is the ibuprofen and which one are the sleeping pills.
Right.
You know? Drives me up the wall.
But, like Tiki by nature, it's very, like, cluttered. You know what I mean?
Well, like, if you know, like in my home bar, it's cluttered as it is. You know, Tim, my sponsor from Tanduai, the first thing he said when he came in my home bar is, this is a really orderly room.
Right.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be cluttered, like, you know, controlled chaos, I guess.
Right, yeah. Well, this place has a lot of... That's one thing about this bar, it's Tiki, but there's stuff in here that are not... It's not Tiki.
Right.
It's just, like, just tchotchkes that people have bought in through the years.
Yeah.
But we leave it up because it just fits, you know?
Well, and what I tell a lot of people is the tiki has its own personality, right?
We have stuff in here because people go on vacations and they'll go to some exotic place or wherever, and they'll pick up something and say, you know what, we got this on our vacation, you know, and can we put it up? And yeah, okay, and they'll sign it and we'll hang it up and find a spot for it.
Yeah.
As long as it's not too big.
Yeah.
That's one thing I like about it. It's like, it's very organic.
Yeah.
Whereas if you go into some bars, it's like, you could tell, like, everything has its place. And
yeah. The thing that I admire most about tiki is that, again, going back to having its own personality, it breaks the rules, right? It says I'm going to do what I want to do, and it's still tiki to the core, you know? I mean, like, just the history and the lineage alone. But the personality is still tiki, even though it's not like what you would consider, like, you know, traditional playing exotica and you know what I'm saying about that.
Well, yeah, I think like with any business, you have to play to your audience.
Of course. Of course.
And there's a lot of people who come in here that aren't necessarily into exotica music.
Right.
You know, I mean, we do play it still once in a while. But, you know, if we played it too much, I know for a fact people would come up here and they would complain. They would complain about it. So
right.
You play to your audience.
What makes the tiki unique, though, too, is because of the size. It's the size of a garage. And a lot of people come in here and you're elbow to elbow with somebody.
Right.
And, you know, first-time person would be like, well, what are you drinking? What's a good drink here? Right away, you're in a conversation with somebody.
Sure.
You know, it's not like a big place and, you know, or there's all kinds of room. This is very small in here.
Yeah, that's the one thing I like about this bar.
You're forced to talk to somebody.
You're almost forced to talk to
people.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people are sitting at a table and another there's a couple or something and they want to sit down and they go, oh, come on, sit down at our table. You know, all of a sudden you mind.
Yeah. People share tables here. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of bars. It's very sterile and you don't feel comfortable talking to people.
And the one thing that I really also enjoy about this bar, which is, you know, I don't really see at a lot of other bars, are the regulars are very protective of this bar, right? They make sure that everybody that's in here is old enough to be in here. They help check IDs. They help throw out trash. They help bring ice over the counter if they, you know.
Yeah.
And they help clear tables, you know. And a lot of bars, most bars that I've been to don't have that kind of loyalty to the bar that they patronize. The regulars here are very protective of that, very, very much like to keep the integrity of the bar intact.
Yeah, no, that's true, Adrian. Yeah,
well, I think some of that has to do with the bar itself, and then some of that has to do with the fact that it's still family run.
Yeah.
You know, I think there are a lot of other bars that have been there a long time, but they're not necessarily family run. So you don't have that really...
That connection.
To them.
So what is the future of the Tiki Tea?
What's the future like? You're the future.
You know, one day at a time.
One day at a time.
Okay.
One day at a time.
Well, we're
no cresting. Beer garden in the parking lot?
No beer garden.
We're cresting our 57th year now. That's coming.
And I want to congratulate you guys on 56 years. Last week, we just experienced the 56th anniversary last Friday.
One day at a time, but when we reach our 60th, then we're going to really party out.
Knock on wood, if we reach our 60th.
Hey, you know, any business that runs as long as the Tiki has, is they're doing something right. So congratulations to you guys.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
You know what makes the Tiki? It's the patrons, what we have on the wall there, the patrons of rare character.
Yeah.
It's the people that come here and make the bar.
Yeah, you know what? We didn't actually get to mention that. I want to mention that real quick. The patrons of rare character are the people that have been coming here for decades. There are people on that wall that have been coming here since before I was alive. And I'm 48 years old.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm honored to be on that wall. You know, like, people want to get on the wall here at the Tiki. They always ask, how do I get on the wall at the Tiki? And I always tell them, you have to earn your way on the wall. And when they feel that you've earned your way on the wall, you'll get a card and you'll get to put your name up there. But it's not about, you know, how much money you spend. It's not about how many drinks you drink. It's about, you know, supporting the bar and showing that, you know, you're a loyal patron of the bar. And you'll eventually earn your way up there. And just being on the Patrons of Rare Character wall is a huge honor for me. And the spot that I got too, which is the spot that Huell Hauser used to have, is a huge honor for me as well.
Yeah.
When Huell passed, I took his card down and I put it behind the bar. So I thought maybe somebody might want to take it for posterity.
Right. Yeah, and I swooped right in.
Yeah. Huell used to come in here quite a bit, and his criteria is that he never did bars.
Yeah, you know? I always thought that this would have been a great place for him to story
but just
on.
Before he passed away, he called me over and he says, "You know, Mike, I want to talk to you." And I said, "Well, what's up, Huell?" And he said, "I've been thinking my criteria over, and you're not just a bar. You have the history of your dad with, Donna Beachcomber and all of the tropical drinks and all that, and your family run. I probably want to do a segment on you." And I go, "Hey, great, Huell, anytime." Then he left, and then I didn't see him for a couple of months, and then all of a sudden on the news, he passed away.
Yeah, it's such a bummer that he passed away.
Yeah.
That's one thing about these cards. Sometimes I look at these cards and I think how many of these people are no longer with us.
Yeah.
I know for a fact there are certain people on there that aren't around.
Oh, I know that for sure. I know that there's probably a ton. There's probably a lot.
Yeah.
There's a nice picture right up there hanging. There's a picture of my dad. There's a lady, Kathy Wilbur, and my mom, and then Ken Wilbur. And that was taken right after they had they got married, and there was a luau in Beverly Hill, or pardon me, that was a reception in Glendale. After they got married, and then that was at the reception. That was taken at the reception, and it's a great picture, man. You had to hang it in here because they're all four of those people.
Ken and Kathy were a couple that used to come in. They actually met here.
Right. Yeah.
And they got married.
Yeah. And they started dating. They met here and started dating, and then they got married.
I can't count the number of people that I've, especially like younger people, who come in and say, "Hey, yeah, my mom and dad, they met here." And
they
either
are coming
by themselves or they bring their parents in and they say,
they have a connection to it.
So many people that are probably, they've met here and dated and gotten married a lot, hundreds by now, but I don't know how many are still married.
Oh, just
some of them are, but.
Before our last vacation, a couple weeks before our last vacation, I had a guy come in, and his date got up to go to the restroom, and he leaned over and he said, "Hey, I'm gonna propose to my girl. Can you help me out?" And
wow, that's cool.
Yeah, and this is the first time. I've been here a while, and that's the first time somebody's asked me to do that.
Wow.
So I was freaking out.
Yeah.
Like, how am I gonna do this? So I figured, okay, I'll take the ring and I'll make the drink, and I'll put the ring on the straw. And I'll put two straws in it. I'll put the ring on her straw.
Yeah.
It didn't work out too well.
I fell right to the bottom of the glass.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know what he was thinking, but he actually lifted the straw up, and the ring went right to the bottom of the glass.
Right. Well, A for effort.
Yeah. Well, I tried.
Well, obviously, you guys know that I feel connected to this bar. It's my favorite bar. I always tell people it's the best bar in the world. And I probably shouldn't be telling you this, but, my kids, they're teenagers right now, and I've still got a ways to go. But, when the time comes and I pass, if this tiki is still here, my kids will be old enough at the time to sneak in and dump my ashes in the fountain.
I can already see
Junior or whoever else cursing me out for clogging the fountain.
Yeah, that's not a good idea.
Well, I'll find my way in here somehow. So,
okay. we can take your ashes, roll you up, and smoke you outside if you want.
Oh, there you go. But can you smoke ashes if they're already ash?
Good question.
Maybe you can sprinkle me into a Ray's mistake or something.
There you
and then,
go.
Change the flavor a little bit. Back to talking about people getting engaged here and stuff, I'll never forget there was one night when Nicolas Cage was sitting here at the table, and this one guy was at the bar, and he did the same thing like what you were saying, Mike. He goes, "You know what? I want to propose to my girlfriend tonight." And at first I thought he was joking. He says, "No, I'm serious, She went to the washroom," and he says, "When she comes out, I'm going to propose to her. I have a ring and everything. You mind if you turn down the music and everything when she comes out?" And I says, "No, okay, fine." So She comes out, and he gets down on his knees.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, you know, we've been dating for the last couple of 6 months or whatever, and I just want to take this opportunity. I love you so very much. Would you please marry me? And he has this ring, and Nicolas Cage is sitting at this table, and he's looking like, and his jaw's dropping, like, is this a play? Are these guys joking or what? He couldn't believe what was going on, but the guy was really serious.
Yeah.
And he actually proposed, and she's, oh, yeah, oh, God, I love you. And then he gets up, and they start kissing and everything, and then everybody starts clapping, and even Nicolas Cage came over and congratulated him.
Wow.
Everything, man.
That's
it
interesting.
It was pretty funny.
That's funny. Nicolas Cage was part of the celebration.
Yeah, yeah. He thought, like, what the hell is going on here?
There, you know what? I'm realizing from you telling me this story is that there's probably a bunch of Nicolas Cage stories with this bar, isn't there?
Nicolas Cage? No, he came in quite a bit.
Yeah, he came in quite a bit. Yeah, that's yeah.
But you know what? One thing I liked about him, he was an average guy. If you talk to him, he'd talk to you and party with you, and he wasn't like, oh, yeah. When I talked to him, I just said, you know what? I like your movies. And he goes, oh, thank you. And I go, oh, thank you, Nick. You know, and I didn't bug him, like, can I have your autograph or picture?
Right.
You know, he was a good guy.
Right.
Yeah.
My favorite celebrity story when it comes to the bar, what happened actually when I wasn't even here, you told me about it, was with Edward James Olmos.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, he was doing some work when this studio was in between Allied Artists and KCT. It was called Color Vision. They did a lot of commercials over here, and he did some work. Actually, he did some work too when it was Channel 28, and he came in a few times. And one time he came in, and there were three ladies with him and two other guys, and they wanted to eat. They said, "Well, do you have any food?" He said, "No, we don't have any food." So they went next door to Chavo.
Right.
And they bought a bunch of chips, and they brought a lot of food in here and started eating it. And they had a big mess on the table, and they got up to leave. They all left. And Edward James Olmos comes up and he goes, do you have a trash can? And I go, at the time it was outside, you know, at the bar here. And I said, yeah, right there. So he busts the table.
Oh, wow.
And they're standing at the door, and they're looking at him like, what are you doing?
Right, right.
What are you doing? You know, and he cleaned up the table.
He was being a good patron.
And he's a movie star.
Yeah, yeah.
And he busts the table, and they're saying, well, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
And these two guys were in front of me, and after he left, they go, Mike, who was that? And I said, that Edward James Olmos. And I go, oh, yeah, we thought he was a celebrity. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
To me, that's way cool, yeah.
Yeah, totally cool.
Yeah, I mean, hey, you make a mess, and they brought it in. He said, I'm not going to leave this stuff here.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet they all split.
Wow. Wow, that speaks volumes of his character. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, he was a cool guy. You know, we're all movie stars in our own
right. Right, we're the movie star of our own movie.
That's right.
Exactly.
Well, I want to be respectful of your time. I know that you guys have to prepare to get the bar open here in a little bit. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up. I want to thank you guys for taking the time to sit down with me and tell me your stories and answer some questions about the old days. And I want to encourage everybody that's listening to this, if you're in the LA area or you're coming to the LA area, to stop by the best bar in the world. Not just the best tiki bar, but the best bar in the world. The Tiki Tea on 4427 Sunset Boulevard, Los Angeles, California. I have that memorized because, you know, the regulars here and I, we call ourselves Club 4427. So if you see the hashtag Club 4427, we're basically patting ourselves on the back.
I didn't even know that.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I had no idea.
Oh, well, I'll have to show you. We're going to hashtag it on Instagram today.
Okay.
So thanks for listening, everybody. If you have any questions, comments, or just want to leave a shout out, check us out on Facebook at the Desert Oasis Room group page, or find us on Instagram at Polynesian Pop. Cheers and aloha.